So, Carl, you are the overnight guy and engineer of KDEY. How did you get from Boulder to Casper?
Well, let me clarify that. I was not overnights. My first shift was a daytime operation.
Okay.
I mean, daytime only at KDEY. Yep. So I went into the office picking my check one day, and I really wanted to get on the air. So I begged Misha for an air shift, and, you know, they put me on the air for a while in afternoons, and that was my first experience on the air. And then to get to Casper, Steve Rumel, of course, would go up there occasionally to engineer for him when they had problems. And I went up there with him one weekend. I kept thinking, you know, I'd really love to come to KETI. So they let me transfer to KETI when I brought it up with the Prathers. A little did I know, I think I was on the way out anyway. They were getting ready to fire me because I was that bad. That's what Steve told me later, anyhow. Went to KETI after that and got a shift from the caboose, the Katy Caboose. That was my first shift to KETI.
Oh, so you actually worked at the Katy Caboose.
Yes,
I didn't realize that.
I think Jody wanted out of it for a while. So they brought me up for that, and I did that for the longest time, and I really loved it because, you know, I was finally in Top 40 radio because that's what the format was at night, at least on KETI.
What? Give me the time frame that you were actually there.
I can only tell you a fall time, 1963. It was in the fall of 63.
And then you were there for about a year?
About a year, because I went to Boulder in the late summer or early fall of 64. So, yeah.
You went back to Boulder, you say?
I'm sorry, did I say Boulder? I meant to Billings.
Billings, okay. Your time at Katy was spent with the likes of, Steve Rumel was not there at that point in time. Was Bill Sims there?
Yes, Bill Sims was brought up from Albuquerque to be the program director. And he was a very driven person. He did a good job, but he got reined in by Meenan. You know, I was going too far in the Top 40 direction. I remember he was a little disappointed by that. But like you said earlier, you know, Meenan didn't want a time and temperature outfit, wanted mm-hmm. something that had substance to it.
Who else would have been there at that point in time? Was Sarge McClintock there?
He came later. He joined us, and he and I became very close friends.
Of course, Sarge, by his own admission, he said he'd been hired and fired at Katy so many times he couldn't remember. Of course, he was, as he described, the high school kid back in 1960 working at Katy. So this must have been one of his incarnations.
Yeah, they brought him back, and he did a very good evening show. And I actually learned a lot about radio from him just by watching him by osmosis. But he didn't want to stay very long, apparently. He sabotaged himself and, you know, went out on a binge and didn't show up for a shift and got fired. And that's how he left each time, it seems. That's the way he was.
I first met Sarge. He was working at KVOC, so this would have been about 1964, 65. And I was just a young kid. And Sarge was doing production and doing an air shift. He was one of the most patient individuals at that point in time with a young guy like me. He allowed me to sit there right beside him in the production room. He showed me what he was doing. He was quite an influence as far as through broadcasting to my early start in radio.
Well, that makes two of us. He was that way. I know a lot of times he'd be on the evening shift, and I was chief engineer for a while at KETI. And I'd be in engineering on studio equipment in the evenings. Then at midnight, he'd sign off, we'd go out, we'd probably drink till about 3 or 4 in the morning. And sometimes even come back to the studio and do production and do some crazy bits mm-hmm. that we put on the air. So I did learn a lot from him, and he was a very close friend.
You didn't by chance build the Katy Caboose, did you?
Oh, no. It was built by the time I got there, you know.
Okay. Did you take any pictures of the Katy Caboose? That's one of the things that we do not have, is we don't have a picture of the Katy Caboose.
I wish I did.
Well, that's just the way it is.
It was a nice-looking little caboose shack. You know, it was very cramped inside.
Yeah.
Had a little stand-up board with two turntables and a mic, and that was it. And a little transistor radio for where you could get your cues.
For your air monitor and whatnot, yeah. I remember it, driving by it when I was a kid. I didn't drive by, but my folks drove by, and I was in the car and would say, well, that's what that is. That's the Katy Caboose. You know, it was famous.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were at Katy. You were also a music director for a while?
Yes. I put together the Top 40 sheets. That was something that Steve Rumel normally did, apparently, but he was long gone by that time, of course. Steve did come back occasionally to do engineering for me. As I mentioned, I was chief engineer for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. I think they just, it was a budget thing.
Yeah, sure.
I was cheap. I didn't care to work on the transmitter too much. So we'd bring up Steve to do any transmitter maintenance and a few special problems in the studio. And he'd contract for an overnight come up, and we just watch him work. And it was just amazing.
Well, and at that point in time, he would probably came up and did he do the proofs? And because the FCC required that you could prove that you were really doing what you were supposed to be doing. And I know
proof of performance.
Yeah. And he would do that. I know contract to stations to do that. So. Well, talk a little bit about, okay, you worked with Steve at KDEY in Boulder. You spent time with him over the years at KDE and whatnot. Give me some impressions. He was described as by Shirley Meenan as a 19-year-old genius. Programming genius is the way she described it. Give me your impressions of Steve Brummel.
Well, he was good at programming, I think, but his real genius lay in engineering. I just marveled at what he could do with electronic circuits. I remember we were both ham radio operators, and he had a license. And there was some new tube that came on the market. We were talking about it. He got hold of one, and he built a transmitter around it that was well over 1,000 watts. And ham radio is limited to 1,000 watts, but so he was way over power. But I remember watching him put it together. It seemed like he did it in about over two nights and put it on the air, and it worked. And I just thought, how do you do that? That's just amazing how you do that. It looked professional, and he just threw it together, it seemed. So that's where his genius was.
I've heard stories about the ham shack that he had in Boulder after he went to work for NCAR. Were you part of that, or did you know anything about that?
That's probably what I'm talking about. I'm not sure what you mean.
The story that I got, they apparently had like a 30-foot trailer out on some bluff with a tower out at the end of the bluff, and it was full of all kinds of fancy equipment.
Wow. No, I missed out on that. That doesn't surprise me. She would have loved to have seen it.
That was apparently during his NCAR time before he went back up to Casper. So.
Yeah, so, he was probably in Billings at that time.
Yeah, that could be.